The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And in the week that saw that biggest public bust up of what had appeared to be two close friends, Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast, has been thinking about how to handle it when friendships sunder. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Well, yes, as you say, it definitely provokes that kind of thinking, doesn't it, around friendships and how they end. And I suppose we've been able to watch it right out there in front of us, and the insults and the secrets being told and all of that. And it made me think about a lot of the way that friendships do break, especially, I suppose, I'm thinking adult friendships here, of course. Mm-hmm. And you do hear this kind of tendency for people to kind of, you know, get the higher ground and to tell their story first. And they often, you know, will reveal things about the other friend. And it all is quite toxic, you know, and it can be very damaging. And I think it says quite a lot about the person themselves, so, and the friendship, of course, that they had. But I think it's worth talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the reasons why friendships sunder. I mean, it can be a row over money, a row over whatever. It can be a betrayal of trust. It can be maybe simply a growing apart, and people find each other, and, you know, what was there has gone.
Exactly, because life changes and our priorities change, and you know, the different stages in our life, we have to give our time to different things. And sometimes, friendships certainly sort of ebb and flow, don't they? You know, you have more time at different points. But I think where there's a real end to a friendship, which is where one person has made the decision to withdraw from that friendship, it's a little bit different. It's less of an ebb, more of a cut, I suppose. And where they will withdraw, won't respond maybe to texts, will say, I don't want, you know, to continue with this anymore. So I think when it's more cutting and more distinct, it has a different quality to it. And and of course, if there's two people involved, which there is, if one person doesn't see that coming in any way, the suddenness of that can really make the intensity of it 10 times more. And so you can get much more intense reactions, much more anger, much more kind of, resentment, and a greater inclination to do the toxic stuff.
Does it bring into question in some people's minds some other aspects of their lives? You know, if the person that you maybe were a regular chatter with or whatever, and you shared all your life experiences, you picked up the phone or whatever, or you met for coffee whenever you had a crisis, and suddenly they're not available. And then do you start asking yourself, is it me?
Yeah, of course. You do start asking, is it me? And you're left with, often people are left with those questions because a friend who pulls away often doesn't want to tell you, or they're not prepared to, or they feel it's not worth it, or they feel it might be hurtful, or they feel it might just get them involved in a further kind of row, and they may be right. So sometimes you do just have to accept that a person has made the choice not to be friends with you. And I know it's kind of hard, and you do have to kind of wrestle with it a little bit. You have to wrestle with, you know, do you just accept this? Do you ask a few questions? Do you try and untangle the whole thing? Or do you just accept that actually we have the right to be friends and not friends with people? And it is okay if people pull back. Maybe there's something to learn from it. Maybe, you know, you may be going to be left with those sort of unanswered questions. Something I often mention to people is, you know, to get some of that out of their head, I often encourage people to write a letter that doesn't get sent, but rather a letter to the person just to say, you know, I am, and I thought we were very close, and I'm not quite sure why we aren't, you know. And you kind of articulate it. It's kind of almost like the parallel of journaling, but it's quite therapeutic.
Is it worth, though, trying to find out what went wrong? I mean, if, for example, someone is spreading malicious gossip about you and your former friend believes it, even though it ain't true, and if they knew it wasn't true, then the sundering might not have happened. I mean, should you try to be forensic and find out why?
I think you can go down that road and give that a lot of energy. But my experience is that you can't control what people believe and what people are told. It's very hard, you know, it's very hard to chase down rumor and to, I mean, if you have an easy opportunity to clarify it. But myself, I've always felt that people, you know, also have to be adult about what they are told. You know, we see it a lot in the toxic breakups, in separations, the things that are said. It's a similar parallel, isn't it? And things that are said. And I think you have to rely on your friends and people who know you well, that they will not believe everything that they are told. And I think we as adults have to be discerning in what we are told by people who have been in some way in a friendship or a relationship that they are now stepped out of, or the other party has stepped out of.
The problem is someone might try to reconcile you. You know, there might be a third party who thinks it's a shame that Stephanie and Pat are no longer talking. So let's try and reconcile. Should you sort of leave yourself open to that process, or?
Well, yes, I think it depends how important that friendship is. I think it's important that you stay open, but don't, you know, stay open to reconciliation if it's a healthy kind of reconciliation. I think that sometimes, though, if things have happened like that and there has been an ending, now, if there's a misunderstanding, that's obviously a resolvable thing. But if, on the other hand, the person has just pulled away from you because maybe they've seen something in your behavior or what you've done, something they cannot accept, and they may just see that, I mean, I certainly would have seen situations where somebody may have done something that just maybe morally, ethically, or otherwise that you just couldn't tolerate, or you just didn't want to be around it. And you have to make decisions like that in life, I think, to step back from some people. And that's okay. They are who they are, but you can't necessarily change them, or there isn't necessarily a middle ground. So I think you have to keep yourself open to reconciliation if it's healthy. And, you know, certainly, though, have support around you, because these things have the capacity to kind of provoke in us early rejections. We're simple in that sense. All our little hurts in life are slightly stacked up, one upon the other, like pennies. And when another one happens, they can all come back and sort of topple and remind us. So that's why the intensity really builds up.
Now, what can you expect if your friend, former friend, is a narcissist? And we've obviously seen that with the two White House boys.
Indeed.
What are they likely to be more vindictive in their responses?
Yes, they are. If you are a friend with a narcissist, or indeed a girlfriend, boyfriend, or otherwise, you will know that the narcissist will backlash very, very much. And the reason they do that is because, maybe just to say the dynamic behind it, is that the narcissist is very empty inside. They feel very empty inside. And so they fill up all of the time by controlling everything around them and by getting all of that lauding and all of that complimenting and all of that I'm great, you know. So we've lots of examples of that, as you say, out there now. But the problem is, if you hit back at them or say, I don't want you, I don't want your friendship, I don't want to be in your company, they you hit into that real narcissistic wound in them, that emptiness in them, and they kick back like a, as they say, like a professional boxer fighter. They come out to damage you. That's what they do, because they have to damage you to feel okay again. And so you have to be really careful of what they will do. They will lash out. They will guilt trip. They will, they will gaslight you and tell you you're overreacting, that you're they're the victim. You're not the victim here. They will damage your reputation. That's how they do it. And they do everything to get back in control. That's what they do. So you have to be really careful on that. And I often encourage people, when they're dealing with a narcissist, just to try and slow it all down. Stop explaining, stop answering, stop texting, leave the gap. You have to get back and create distance. Slowness, sort of, you know, bigger pauses between texts even is a good beginning, and then make those pauses and sort of space it out even more. Create some space so you can think, because it's only when you get back further from the narcissist that you actually can see what they're doing to you. Otherwise, you're kind of in that, I suppose it's like, I think of it like a little tornado, like the spin of a tornado, you're in it.
All right. Stephanie, thank you very much for joining us. Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.